The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 987. It's the 7th of February 2018. On the podcast today, I have Jeremy Martin, who's CEO of Horizonte Minerals. That's HZM ticker. And Jeremy discusses the completion of the trial excavation at the Araguaia Nickel Project in Brazil, and also talks about the Vermelho Nickel Cobalt acquisition from Vale. Also on the podcast, Brian Larkin, CEO of United Oil and Gas, that's UOG ticker, and Brian talks about their no-cost option agreement to farm into UK licence P2264, which contains the Uccle prospect, and also Brian goes over the company's strategy. Plus, I've also got the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals. That's HZM. Jeremy, thanks for joining me.
Justin, good to speak to you again.
Yeah, and things are progressing well. You've had some news out of late, and we'll get to that. And we'll also cover a bit of a backstory or back news that was released start of the year or start of last year. But before we do, Jeremy, get into all that, for people listening who are new to investing or have just heard of the company and not quite sure what it's about, can you summarise Horizonte? What's it all about, please?
Yeah, Horizonte is an AIM and TSX-listed company. We're focused in Brazil, and we're developing the Araguaia Nickel Project, which will be one of the highest grade saprolite projects globally. And we've also recently just acquired an adjacent project called Vermelho from Vale. So today we have one of the largest nickel resource bases globally, and we're aiming to be producing early in 2021.
Yeah, and we'll cover that acquisition because we haven't really spoken about that. Before we do, let's get into the recent news. So you completed sort of a trial excavation program. Take us through that, what it means, the significance of this, if you could, Jeremy.
Yeah, this trial mining campaign was a key part of one of the feasibility study work streams, and the objective was to allow you to determine what was actually extracted out of the ground. So when you look at your mining models, it will tell you that you've got X percent nickel, that you've got X iron, silica, magnesium ratios in any part of the operation, and you want to make sure that when you actually start mining that, what the computer model is telling you, you're actually getting out of the ground. So this was a very successful campaign. We excavated around 25,000 tons of material, differing grades. So it wasn't only high grade material, it was medium, low grade. And it was it achieved all of its objectives. We got very good reconciliation. That means what the model was telling you versus what was coming out of the ground. We were sort of 80 to 90% recovery, which is very high. And the objective of the program is to allow us to convert around 25% of the current probable reserve over to proven, which is your highest degree of confidence. Mm-hmm. So, yes, a successful campaign, and all of that information is now being worked into the feasibility study. And it also allowed you to look at your mining technique that you're going to use, your slopes actually support themselves, the water inflow. It's all real data, and is all a big step in terms of de-risking the project.
Yeah, yeah. And as far as that feasibility study is concerned, when will that be released?
Yeah, we're working through the feasibility study, and the aim is that that will be out during the early part of the year. There's a number of work streams which are still ongoing in that study. And also the increase in nickel price means that we are looking at the resource slightly differently. Areas before where you're focusing purely on nickel, now you're also looking on the other elements, which with a lower nickel price you wouldn't have been able to access. And also we're looking at is there any potential to integrate ore from the newly acquired Vermelho project into that mining cycle. So lots of work going on there, and we're looking forward to advancing that and completing that.
Okay, well, let's go back to that. It's 19th of December, the Vermelho sort of acquisition, nickel cobalt project. Take us through that. Why have you done it? And, you know, take us through the highlights of the potential here, Jeremy, if you could.
Yeah, so obviously our focus has been to take Araguaia from a grassroots discovery through feasibility and into the construction stage. And we've been successfully delivering those milestones. And all of that work has been completed right at the bottom of the nickel price cycle. So we've had sort of 2 to 3 years where the nickel price has been around $7,000 to $8,000 a ton, which is 10-year nickel price lows. And we've also been conscious that it's the old adage, if you want to buy, you want to buy at the bottom of the market. And that's what we've done with the Teck asset, the Glencore asset. So we were conscious that if there was another world-class opportunity, and by that I mean a high-quality, scalable nickel resource that was within our operating region, we would take a hard look at it. And we were able to identify a project that Vale had been developing. This was the Vermelho Nickel project. And they had taken that all the way through a full feasibility study. And in 2005, they'd actually approved the construction of a $1.2 billion mine on that project. It's located about 60 kilometers from Araguaia North, so it's within a trucking distance of our overall project. And we were successfully able to acquire that project for a total of $8 million. $2 million up front gets us 100% and the balance payment on first commercial production. Vale, we believe, have conservatively spent around $200 million on that project. So $200 million spend and $8 million acquisition. So we're extremely pleased with that, and we believe it adds significant value to our overall offering. We've got mine number one being Araguaia, and then mine number two from Vermelho, with upgrading potential across both projects.
Yeah, well, you've done an amazing deal here, like the previous deal you did. And I can understand when you did the original deal sort of on Araguaia and stuff, you know, the nickel price was you know, at historic lows. But now there is, you know, activity in the nickel price is ticking up. So why has Vale sold this? It obviously has a huge potential, doesn't it?
I think that's a good question. I mean, at the time they were developing this, Vale didn't have a nickel division. Shortly after they were advancing this project, they also acquired Kaneko Resources for the Onça Puma project, which we've talked about historically. That's also in the same region. And so between Onça Puma and Vermelho, that was going to be Vale's core nickel business. They've built Onça Puma, that's producing today. That's an analogous style of mine to Araguaia. And then shortly after they announced the development of Vermelho, they went in and they bid on Inco, which was Canada's largest nickel company. It was actually the largest nickel company in the world at that point. And that was in 2006. They acquired Inco, and that brought in four producing mines and effectively a carbon copy of Vermelho in New Caledonia called Goro. And that was already under development. It was upwards of $2 billion required to complete that project. And obviously, as a major company, you have to rationalize where your spend is. The fact that Goro was already under construction, that's where Vale focused their development funding. And then Vermelho went back onto the pipeline. And that's to acquire the asset.
Yeah. And as far as paying for this is concerned, you've raised money, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, that was linked to the transaction. We closed a financing in early January, and we raised 9.2 million sterling. So the proceeds for that are used to acquire the upfront payment on the transaction, and also to advance Vermelho and Araguaia. And that gives the company now 24 months of runtime. So We're in a very strong position, and that was underpinned by a number of our key shareholders. So today the company's got a 60 million market cap, and you've got a very good shareholder base led by Teck, Glencore, JP Morgan, and you've got three or four other large London institutional names behind the company. So I think for shareholders, it's important to show that we've got a strong balance sheet and we're fully in growth mode.
Yeah, and it's probably what's pointed out right here. I mean, you know, when you're up and running and producing, and you know, the kind of figures you'll be throwing off, what kind of cash you're generating, because people can see you are like a 60 million market cap, but it's probably worth talking about the potential here as well.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the pre-feasibility study numbers on Araguaia, obviously they are historic. They're sort of 18 months to 2 years out of date now, and they will be updated in the feasibility. But on those numbers, on our base case model, you were generating anywhere between sort of $70 to $80 million a year operating profit on Araguaia alone. So it's a massively cash generative business.
Yeah, well, that's bigger than the current market cap. What was it, around about? So, excellent. And just one final thought on nickel. I know since we've started talking, it's been seen in a different light now. When we first started talking, nickel was the commodity out of favour completely, but now it's really coming into favour. What's your thoughts on it, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think as we said earlier in this interview, I mean, we've effectively been developing Horizonte for the last 5 years against a backdrop of a commodity where there hasn't been any real interest from an investment point of view because it's been trading at these sort of 14 to 15 year historic lows. Midway through last year, that really started to change. And the factors behind that are the underlying demand for nickel, which is obviously going into stainless steel, is robust. We're seeing stainless growing at sort of 4 to 5% year on year. Actually, last year it grew at 9%. And that's where 70% of nickel goes into today. So factor one is we've got strong demand. Number two, we have got limited new production capacity because there's been no significant investment in the nickel space over the time we've been talking. And then the other big development is the EV, the electric vehicle market, has focused its attention on nickel for use in the cathode of the batteries. So we're now seeing a completely new market that hasn't been there before building up around that arena. And if you take a sort of a cross-section of future demand, sort of 2025 is the crossover point. It could be anywhere up to 20-25% increase in current nickel demand, which is very significant. And that's got to come from new operations, which need to be developed now. So I think Horizonte today is in a very strong position. Number one, you've got two very high quality assets at the right stage of development, and you've got a nickel market which is receptive with an increasing price. And over the next 12 to 24 months, I think we can really build the value of the company up towards, we'd like to see ourselves up towards 100 million market cap by the end of the year, which means that you are moving into the institutional world and at the upper end of the AIM market.
Okay. So, Jeremy, in summary, if someone's listening and likes the sound of this, where you're going and the sector you're in, but is not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Number one, we have got a combined asset base of over 200 million tonnes of nickel, which gives you over 2.5 million tonnes of contained nickel in the ground and over 100,000 tonnes of cobalt. So that is one of the largest resource camps globally, 100% owned by a single company. Number two, Araguaia is moving towards the end of a feasibility study, which will show it's robust. And the aim is that we're construction ready at the end of this year, which is a big de-risking step. And number three, the nickel market is fully aligned to the milestones that we're going to be developing. And I believe the nickel market is going to be robust through this year into next year and beyond. And we are fully supported in terms of funding and our shareholder base to deliver on our milestones. So I think it's a very exciting entry point to the company.
Excellent stuff, Jeremy. Good to chat to you. And no doubt we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Look forward to keeping you updated. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Brian Larkin, CEO of United Oil and Gas at UOG. Brian, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin.
And I know you're down with the flu a bit, so thanks for coming on. And it's going around the place, so I think
it's an occupational hazard with the amount of time I spend on aeroplanes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I imagine you spend a lot because I did tweet out recently. Brian's not larking about because I mean I did a blog on you, and then literally on the Monday, or I think it was Tuesday, you announced another deal. And for people not aware of you, we'll go into the deals you've done because, you know, like I said, even people familiar with the company, with your company, probably has to remind themselves of all the deals you've done in the last 6 months, which is phenomenal, or just a bit longer than that. So before we go into some of those, Brian, for people not aware of United Oil and Gas, just summarise the business, please, if you could.
Yeah, well, we're a former Tull Oil New Ventures team, and started the company in April 2015 at my dining table. And in 2.5 years since the company's inception, we've listed on the London Stock Exchange. We have added built a portfolio of over 6-7 licenses with near-term activity. We've drilled a successful well in Italy. We have found gas. We're on the road to production, and along the way, we've doubled the share price. So we've had a very quick and fast 2.5 years since inception. But we're making really good progress, and I think the market, to some extent, has nearly struggled to keep up with us with everything that we've put together in such a short period of time.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. It's like I said, I know about you, and I've written a blog on you. But I do, even when I wrote the blog, it was literally out of date within a couple of days of writing it, because it came out with the option agreement. So in fact, let's go into that. So the option agreement to farm into license P2264. Can you give some details on that, please, Ryan?
Yeah, well, it's a license that we've known of for quite a while, and Swift Exploration and Stanley Matic Industries are the current partners. They have 50% each in the license, and they're looking to farm it down. And there's been a huge amount of interest in this license with some really large mid caps, and we wanted to secure a significant position, equity position in the license now for our shareholders. So we managed to agree an option agreement, which we have over 20% of the field. So we're reasonably happy. Sorry, over 24% of the field. So we're very happy to secure that for our shareholders. And I think what it gives us is, it gives us a potentially low-risk exploration opportunity. It's a little bit longer lead than some of the licenses that we've brought into the portfolio previously. We're probably looking at drilling a well in 2019. But it's one of those that we felt that if we didn't get into it now, we may not get the same terms in 6 months' time. So we're very, very pleased to have managed to secure a material position in the field for our shareholders.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a good one there. So looking at sort of timelines here, I suppose, what's the next? Because obviously, Po Valley and over there, you've drilled a successful well. When's that sort of going into production? Is that the next sort of, I mean that's going to be the first revenue generator, isn't it?
Well, it will be based on the existing portfolio, but we are looking at other opportunities all the time. Some of those opportunities do have production in them, and some of them are portfolio opportunities, which will involve production, exploration, and development. But from our existing portfolio, Italy will potentially be the first into production, and we are meeting with our partners in the next couple of weeks to agree the way forward for this year, and hopefully submit a development plan to the ministry in the next couple of weeks, if not months, and potentially have first production sometime in late 2019.
Yeah. So you just said then, you are still, I mean, currently that is the nearest sort of asset to generate revenue, but you are still looking. So at the moment, you still may release further deals. Is that right?
There is. And then, there's a lot of activity within the portfolio as well. I mean, we're going to be drilling a well in Q2 this year, the Calter well. We'll be drilling that April, May time. So, that's really exciting. We're really, really pleased to be involved in that project, and it fits perfectly with our strategy, and it's located very closely to our existing UK license in PL090 in southern UK. And on that license as well, we're working with Egdon to complete this last piece of seismic and firm up seismic reprocessing to firm up a drill plan for potentially later this year. So we've plenty of activity coming out of the existing portfolio, and we also are continuing to look for additional opportunities where we can create significant value for our shareholders, and some of those again will be potentially farm-ins. But I think we're also starting to look beyond that and starting to look at portfolio type acquisitions.
Okay, and I had Barney Gray on the podcast, who's an independent oil and gas analyst, and he wrote a note on you, and he's put a target of 15.7 pence. You are at the moment, as we speak, just a tad over 5 pence. And, you've got a lot going on for 11.6 million market cap. I remember saying this to somebody else, another company, a couple of years back. And I said it, I chatted to them quite often. and I said it was about 6 months, and then all of a sudden their share price went through the roof. I mean, but, and the thing is, Barney's notes there doesn't include Jamaica, which he quotes, I think, has the potential to open up a multi-billion sort of barrel oil fields. So it's, you know.
Well, yeah, I think. I mean, if you look at what we've put together in the last 6 months versus what we've raised in cash, we've raised $4.25 million since we listed. We have a portfolio now, including Jamaica, with an NPV value in excess of $250 million. Now, just think about that for a minute, because I've spoken to a couple of shareholders in the last couple of weeks, and they're saying to me, oh, look, you know, we think United's going to be a multi-bagger. Well, I don't think it. I think it's obviously clear that we are going to be a multi-bagger. I mean, if you look at you know, what we've put together with so little cash, you know, I think that demonstrates it. I think a share price today at 5p, it's crazy. I know every CEO says their share price is well below what it's truly worth, but I think in our case, it's clearly demonstrated. And Barney's note, you know, he values the company over 15p a share, and as you quite rightly say, he has excluded Jamaica from that number.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that you're saying there, and people, I'm wondering what was holding back the share price, considering this amount of value has been created. And part of me thinking, do you think people are worrying about how you're going to fund this or finance this in some way?
No, I mean, we've no firm plans to go back to the market just yet. But I think if you look at when we have gone to the market, we've got our timing right. I mean, we went to the market Christmas week. We raised $1.25 million at 4p. Share price is at 5 today. I think we've managed to always get that right, and we've been very careful to go to the markets at the right time, and we're going to maximise the value for our shareholders. And we've always tried to do it with a deal in mind, so that you know, it's not just a dilutive process. We're actually coming to the market with an idea to do something else. So, I mean, we raised the 1.25 before Christmas, and after Christmas we announced 2 farm-ins. So we'll constantly look at the most opportune time to go to the market. We have no firm plans just yet. But if I go back to what we were saying, if you look at what we've raised to date, $4.25 million, and we, you know, we, Barney has put a value on us, excluding Jamaica, of an NPV value of over $55 million. So, you know, like that's more than 10 times what we've raised. And imagine what we do with another 4 million, or what we do with 10 million or 15 million. I mean, we would just multiply that again and again and again. So I think the market sees that United has delivered significant value for what we've raised. It just hasn't been reflected yet in our share price. And I think part of that reason is that we've just accumulated and done so much so quickly that the market just hasn't managed to keep up with us. But I think eventually this, it'll all fall into place and the share price will run, and that's going to happen soon.
I think you will get that critical mass where people, and what I notice about shares as well, and stocks and shares, is when the majority of private investors, you know, a little bit late to the party. And I don't mean they'll miss out on a big rise, because, you know, if they buy, and even if you double from here, they'll probably over the longer term do very well. But some people only notice stocks when they've had a significant rise, you know, and I mean, you know, double or something, because then almost the people following share it, and the more people follow, the more people share it, and so the interest becomes exponential, you know, and the heat becomes exponential, almost grows outwards. But going back to sort of, you know, when you were in Tello, and I knew obviously Tello was a big success story. I didn't know how much, and I read a bit about it when I wrote my blog there. And how much of that is in your mind? Because, I mean, just for people who are not aware of it, you know, Aidan Heavey in 1985 had no oil and gas experience, but then he went from nothing almost. But to 2007, he was operating in 23 countries, or Tello was, employed 370 people, producing 73,000 barrels a day, and had a market cap of $17 billion. You know, how much of that is in your head, and how much do you think, yeah, we, you know, I could sort of replicate this, or we can do that again? Do you have
that
in your head?
Yeah, I think we need to put things into perspective. Being realistic, I mean, what Tello achieved was unique. It remains a unique Irish success business story. Yeah. And Aidan certainly blazed the trail for the rest of us coming behind him. I think if we have 10, 15, 20% of Tullo's success, I think it would be a remarkable achievement. But, you know, certainly Aidan and how he got Tullo out of the blocks to where they are today, it's an impressive story, and it is a huge motivation and inspiration for us at United, you know, and Tullow is an extremely entrepreneurial company, and, you know, we learned a hell of a lot there. And but, you know, United are not aiming to be the next Tullow. United is aiming to be the first United, and I think that's the most important thing. You know, Tullow blazed the trail, but, you know, United is its own story, and you know, we certainly look at Tullow as an inspiration, but we want to grow United as its own company, as with its own identity.
Yeah, but it's almost I mean obviously replicating that, like you said, is unique, but when you see that kind of success and the way that the path they took, I suppose you can learn a lot from that, can't you? I suppose.
Yeah, I guess. excuse me. Our strategies are quite similar from when Tullow first started, and over time, I mean, as you grow, you know, you can't keep doing what you've always done, because you don't get the same. You actually get less, because everybody else gets smarter. So, you know, you'd be foolish to say what we're doing now working 2-3 years time, it won't. The story needs to evolve and the strategy needs to evolve, but as Tullow's did, but certainly I think there's a lot of similarities over Tullow's original strategy in back in the late 80s, and you know, they're similar to us in that Tullow would have looked at, you know, kind of low risk, near term opportunities, and they built, they put a foundation in from there and built a company from that. And yeah, look, certainly we're looking to take a similar approach, but we certainly, we don't see ourselves as the next Tullow, we see ourselves as the first United.
Yeah. But, you know, one final thing, I mean, someone asked me about you on Twitter recently, and I said, you know, oil and gas can be very risky, but I think at the moment you've got a nice sort of diversified portfolio there, going from, you know, appraisal to almost production, exploration as well. And there are other companies, which I don't understand, who are of a similar market cap to you, and all they have is one high-impact, high-risk drill. I mean, that's all they've got going on. And people can't seem to tell the difference between that and you, you know, which is odd.
Yeah, well, no, I can understand to some extent. I guess we don't, you know, United is not a get-rich scheme. It's not a get-rich-quick scheme. It's not going to be a one-hit wonder. We're building a company for the longer term, and you do that by building a low-risk business, you know, that underpins everything else, and we're doing that in Europe. The European business, as we see it, will have incremental growth every year, be safe, solid, you know, cash generating, hopefully very soon, and we'll then be able to use that cash to add some of the glamorous, high impact, big bang exploration opportunities in Latin America and Africa. And obviously, as a management team, John and I have a huge amount of experience in those regions, and you know, we're tapping into that to add that kind of bit of excitement to the portfolio. And you know, if one of those comes in, it'll be absolutely fantastic, and it'll be a great day for our shareholders. But if one of them doesn't come in, you know, the business is not going to fall over, because what I've seen in my experience, a lot of those high impact exploration type companies, you know, one or two misses and everything falls apart and the shareholders get destroyed.
Yeah,
we're trying to build a company that protects the shareholders. We can do that, but also, you know, your money's not going to, you know, we're not going to destroy our value, because we still have this safe, solid business in Europe, which is growing nicely, and we've managed to balance the risk across the portfolio. But what's actually really interesting about some of those bigger opportunities, and one thing I'm actually really, really happy with, in the last few weeks, we've had a lot of significant developments where actually a lot of the major companies who we've known, who do business in Latin America and Africa and further afield, they've actually been contacting us with other opportunities and saying, look guys, you know, we've been keeping our eye on you, we like the way you're doing things, you know, we like that you're, you know, you can execute transactions, you can raise cash, and the way you conduct yourselves publicly we really like, and you know, we'd like to add you to our distribution list for farming opportunities. So we're getting access to more and more of those kind of big bang high impact opportunities with majors. Mm-hmm. And we'll continue to evaluate them, and you know, hopefully we'll build a portfolio. But in terms of where we're going, I'm really happy with the progress we've made to date, and a huge amount of credit needs to go to John Leather and our technical team for identifying these fantastic opportunities where we can create significant value. And you know, they've worked really hard since we listed and before we listed to build a portfolio. And you know, you have to kiss a lot of frogs, you have to look at a lot of stuff, to identify kind of those little golden nuggets. And we've managed managed to do that. We've managed to do that. So I'm really pleased with the progress we've made.
Yeah. Well, listen, when you said you realised, I thought, yeah, that makes sense, because it's been nearly 2 weeks now since you've announced a deal. So, come on, Brian, you're slacking. What's happening? So,
a shareholder rang me last week and said, what's going on? I haven't seen an RNS this week.
Yeah. All right. Well, there we are. I'm sure one will come around soon. So,
we're working hard. We're working hard.
Excellent stuff. So, Brian, for anyone listening now and like the sounds of this, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
Well, I've mentioned the team already. We have a fantastic team who are working really hard to extract maximum value from our portfolio, as well as looking at other opportunities to add to the portfolio. I don't think the market's copped on to the value within the portfolio yet, so I think we're way undervalued. It's another opportunity for people to buy stock now. And I think thirdly, we're looking at other opportunities to grow the portfolio. We're not standing still. You know, if you look at what we've achieved to date, you know, so much has happened in the last 6 months with the Italian well, with the assets that we've added to the portfolio. I expect the next 6 to 12 months will be equally as exciting and rewarding for our shareholders.
Excellent stuff. Now, I always say this at the end of a podcast, but when I say to you, I know it's true, but you sound like you're very busy, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Angus Energy, ANGS. At 4, Fast Forward Innovations, FFWD. At 3, UK Oil and Gas, that's UCOG. At 2, Highland Natural Resources, or Highlands Natural Resources, HNR. And number one, most followed, it's the company I wrote a blog about on the weekend. It's Ferrum Crescent, FCR. Have a look, have a read. Big asset, small market cap. And talking about big resources, small companies, I did just invest in another company today based on that. And it was this was featured in that list I sent out recently, compiled via Twitter, which I said, do you know of a small market caps below 10 million with massive resources? And this company was in this. It was Armadale Capital, ACP. And they've just done a resource upgrade. And they've got now resources successfully been upgraded to 51.1 million tonnes at 9.3% total graphitic carbon, including 38.7 million tonnes indicated at 9.3% and 12.4 million tonnes at 9.1%. So it's a big resource, and they're a 5 million market cap. So they've had a change around in the board. So interesting. I've scaled in on the first level here. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Phalanx Group. That's Contract Wind, FLX. At 4, Savanna Petroleum, Exchange of Offer Results. That's SAVP. At 3, Lions Gold, exercise of warrants. At 2, EVR Holdings, board changes. And number 1, most liked RNS came from Highlands Natural Resources. That's DT Ultravert, success in horizontal well protection. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.